When I got access to the internet, I saw that there was this whole world outside of Scientology, and this whole war going on about Scientology outside, and Scientologists fighting battles constantly on the internet, because people on the internet that had put the full OT3 levels available online, that given inside stories about what's really happening in Scientology, you know, what the celebration is all about. And we, no Scientologists knew about this. They were completely censored, you know, and I was like, wow. And I saw pictures of Hubbard wearing glasses. Wow, that's incredible. Why is that significant? The image of Hubbard is highly controlled in Scientology, all of Scientology, not just the CEO, it's highly controlled. The only pictures we ever see of Hubbard are very carefully airbrushed ones where he is posed, and he has posed on these pictures of wearing these fine uniforms, and he looks grand and wise, and he's looking off to the distant galaxies. You know, these are really controlled pictures of Hubbard, and he never wears glasses because he claimed that his eyesight was healed back in, with Dynex, back in 1949 or something, I don't know what it was. But, so he never had to wear glasses, and he claimed that, you know. And here are some pictures of Hubbard wearing glasses. Not just that, wearing glasses at a roulette wheel. I go, oh, very, very interesting. And he's got this long hair. Another picture of him, he's looking ill, and he's looking, his hair is kind of long and scraggly looking, and he looks like drunk. And I read stories of people who worked with him in the 60s telling about his drug taking. So he was popping all the time. When he was right in these wonderful upper levels, he was popping stuff, I don't know, you know, greys and greens, I think he called them, something like that. That's what, you know, incredible stories about this. And this whole Scientology world began to kind of get really shaken for me. The one incorrect impression here that might have come across is that I think Scientologists are bad people. No, they're not bad people. They're absolutely not bad people. They're naive people. They've bought into something. Their thoughts and their worldviews and their conclusions about life have been controlled and have been manipulated and perverted, actually. But they are not bad people. If you kind of were dealing one with any of them in kind of on a day-to-day level, you know, without any mental Scientology, you think, oh, you know, that's a nice, genuine person, you know, because, you know, they are, and most people are, you know. So Scientology are most people, just a slightly more vulnerable type of most people. But I was working with these guys, and they're terribly intelligent people, just bright, able, good people, suffering for this Scientology material. I mean, really suffering. You know, some of these people had kids and houses and husbands and whatever else, you know. And we've had to, in order to make 600,000, it's not easy to, you know, we had to make that money. You don't just find it lying on the streets. You've got to get it off people. You've got to persuade people to give you the money. You've got to find things that you can sell. You've got to, you know, go through financial records and get refunds that you might have been owed by, whatever, you know, all this stuff. It's a huge task to do this thing. And I felt these people were badly treated. I felt they were, because we were told, you know, look, these are just staff members, and they're just staff members. You know, you're a Sea Org member. You go down there, you've got the full authority of the Sea organization. And the idea was I go down there and I order them to do it. You know, I'm the COSMI. Commanding officer SMI, make the money. And that was the idea, right? Rubbish. I could tell myself, oh, fuck that shit. These people are insane. You know, this is my seniors, the Sea Org senior levels, management levels. I find I have to get in there and muck in with these guys, right? First time I'd done anything like that for a long time, like really, not like I'd done work, but mucked in with lower org staff. And just put myself on a complete equal footing with them, you see. Now, they really appreciated that, because not very rarely, very, well, in fact, never, CEO members come down and tell them what to do. That's what happens. But here was this CEO member just right there in the trenches with them. And that was mind-blowing for them, and they found it wonderful. And I found it wonderful, really, really good, intelligent people. These were really good people. I worked like that for 6 months, you know. I became aware of all the Hubbard bullshit, and I was critical of management, so I came back and all this stuff was happening. What happened was that he had a very senior organization, which I briefly mentioned, called the IAS. That was the organization that puts on this huge event every year. Now, the IAS, International Association of Scientologists, is a money-making organization. It raises money. That's its job. And it's supposed to be for a war chest for the protection of Scientology through all eternity. In reality, it's basically an income source that's completely off the books. That's really what it is. And it's a huge income source. I mean, every IS event, you'd be talking like 8 million, 10 million, you know. And a few couple of years later, it was 16 million, you know. That's the kind of money made over 3 days, you know. So as a separate income source, it was very important. But on top of that, the IAS units in every continent used to go around on a regular basis to every single Scientology operation and reg, that's a Scientology word for sell, for sales, right? But it means to get the money out of people. And they'd hard sell these people to donate money to the IAS, you see? And I was getting upset with this because I was like, right, so they came down to us in Bournemouth, these big, and they're very senior, and they're very, way more senior than me, you know, and they've got all this kind of power and all this kind of, because they're granted a lot of power, because they raised so much money. Now we're going to register this person, take this money, and I'm going, no, you're not. No, get out of here, out. Because I'm trying to make 600,000 to save Scientology in the UK, and they go, no, where are they? And I'm going, I get into it. Almost fist fights with these people, and their senior executives, which are people, you never do this in the CEO, you don't shout back at your seniors, you don't do it. This was a complete breakout of all this conditioning, right? Senior execs on the phone, you're gonna let these people do it, you're gonna make them make this money, and you're gonna, I'm going, no, I'm not, you can just go and, pardon my language, fuck yourselves, actually, no. Really pushing back against this. And they gave in. They backed down. They completely backed down. That was it. I won the battle completely. Which was an interesting experience for me because it was undoing a huge amount of conditioning, a huge amount of subservience. It was like I found myself again. I was like, oh, it's not like I was like, oh, I'm great. It's not. It's more like, you know, hey, this is me. You know, they're wrong. Oh, management is wrong. Hubbard's wearing glasses. You know, the whole thing's beginning to shake up a bit. And I'm back at St. Hill. The report obviously went down to some senior execs there. They'd done some investigation on me. They found out on the internet. They assumed that all my unconditioned self, you know, this kind of ballsy, like, you know, oh, fuck you, I'm not taking crap anymore, was because I'd read all the anti-Scientology stuff, and so I was dragged in to a very intense interrogation. It was just, I mean, it was intense isn't the word, actually. I've later read about a lady who was run through the same interrogation process, and it's a newish interrogation, so it's this new type of interrogation, and it's designed to drive you insane, to make you crack. You see, that's what it's designed to do. So that you, well, you're not dangerous. That's why. So they've been running this thing on me for about 3 weeks solid, and it was horrible. It was frightening. And I suddenly realized, I said, you know what? That's it. Enough. And I said, I'm just, you know, and I looked at this person who was a senior RTC executive. And I said, no, look, I've just built a wall in my head. You can come up to that wall, and you can go no further. I sort of visualized this in myself. And like, in that was me, and they weren't going to mess with that anymore. I'd built my defenses. And it was really curious. It was so, to this day, I find it fascinating. It is not true that every Scientologist understands everything that happens in Scientology. They do not understand the technology of what happens, right? But intuitively they do, right? So these people, the moment I did that, back down. The whole thing just stopped. It was like this, if you can imagine, a mad whirlwind storm, you know, thunder and lightning, bam, bam, bam. And then the moment I did that, it stopped. Everything. And they backed off.